Hello, welcome back to the Matt Pfeiffer Experience. I am your host, Matthew Pfeiffer, and today I have on a very special guest. I have Natalie Baird King all the way from Tampa, Florida, and she is with Natalie Baird Mediation, and she helps people mediate divorce cases. And some of you, depending on what state you're in, it might be a mandatory mediation state, it might be something that has been suggested to you. And mediation, I think it's a great route, but it's certainly not perfect. And I think today is going to be a good discussion to see whether or not mediation is a good fit for you. So with all that being said, I'm going to turn it over to our guest, Natalie. Welcome to the Matt Pfeiffer Experience. Thank you so much for your time. Tell everyone a little bit about yourself and how you got started.
Thanks, Matt. It's an honor to be here. I've been an attorney for 23 years here in Florida. Shortly after I got my license, ended up becoming board certified, which there's only a few of us in the United States that have that, board certified in family law. And then about 14 years ago, I decided to venture down the mediation path. And for 12 years, pretty much been practicing mediation practice to help folks versus having a judge make their decisions, empower people to make their own decisions in a divorce case. So that's what I've been doing. Solely for the last 3 years, I can tell you that's exactly what I've been doing. I had to kind of move away from the litigation because it is a very toxic area to be in after a long period of time. But
what do you, you're not the first person we've heard say that on this podcast. What do you feel makes litigation so toxic? And you know, from your experience and from things that you've seen?
There are many reasons, but I'll tell you, how about the top three? So one of the things that I've noticed throughout my 23 years is that when a new judge is assigned to a circuit, in our circuits in the Tri-County area here in the Tampa Bay area, most of them are put in family law. And they knew nothing about family law. Most of them have never practiced family law, don't even know what a petition for divorce looks like. And so they get shoved into the family law courtroom with no experience. And it's, in my opinion, such a disservice to our families because the lawyers are having to train the judges on the law. Mm-hmm. And it's costing people a lot of money for that to happen. And most of them have no idea what they're doing. Wow. So when you talk about toxicity, you're walking into a courtroom and you're like, it's a brand new judge. The person just got assigned there. They did corporate law their entire life. And then they're making decisions for you and your family and your financial future. I mean, yeah. You talk about toxicity. And then I think the second thing is, I think the bench, many times if they get the education that they need, I think what happens is they become, I call it a cookie cutter judge. They basically look at every single case the same, and they apply every single thing that's going on in their mind the same exact way. So, for example, in Florida, we have a 50-50 presumption as of July 1st regarding parenting time sharing. Mm-hmm. We've got a couple judges, hands down, they're doing 50-50. If you live within an hour and a half of each other, that's it, you're getting 50-50. And there's nothing outside of somebody being in a drug rehab or a mental health institute at the time you file your petition. Even then, you can still get 50-50 down the road if you so sobriety. Wow. But so I think that's another reason is that your case is not individualized, even though your listeners are going to think they might be. My case is different, right? My case is very different. The facts are very different. The judge is going to look at me different than all the 5,000 cases that the judges has on their docket. That's not true at all. It's not. Which is more the reason why I think mediation, the process of mediation, is so valuable because people could actually utilize that process and decide. They are the decider.
We're definitely going to talk about mediation here in a second, but I want to ask a few more questions about litigation. So given that circumstance that you just described where the judge just has their mind set, does it get to a point where you're just arguing and litigating something for nothing?
I'd say a majority of times, yes.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I would say if it's not outside of bounds, like, you know how like when you hear a fact and you're like, oh God, that's awful. Yeah. That's when I would say that it's not, you know, for nothing. Yeah. But if you're going in saying, look, you know, like in my state, we're a no-fault state. So you know, adultery can happen in your marriage. It's not going to have any impact on your time sharing at all. It may have an impact on the financial aspects of your case, but there has to be a very distinct thing that's been done. It's called dissipation or waste that's occurred. And if only then, and only then, is your case going to be impacted by adultery. So that's a primary example. Like if you're going in, it's like the other side decided, you know, to go outside the marriage and breach trust and commit adultery, it's not going to have any impact in our state at all, unless very, very, very few things under the law that it would be. So I think to answer your question, yeah, I think if it's something that's way out of bounds, one scenario comes to mind where, you know, this one guy was accused of sexually abusing a child, and they did a psychological evaluation on this person, and there were actually signs within the actual psychological evaluation that had what we call red flags of whether sexual abuse was a tendency of this person, right?
Yeah.
And so that would be a reason, but it has to be like that bad, you know, right. It has to be to that extent. And I think, you know, a lot of people go into court and they believe, well, you know, these facts are different than what the judge will hear. And I'd say probably 90% of the time that people say that, that those facts are being presented before the court at least weekly.
Yeah.
So understanding your case is not unusual is kind of a hard thing to accept.
Do you feel like are there any reasons behind the reason why it would be, why something would need to be that significant? Is it just the judges at this point are just that dense and that, you know, callous to hearing different stories? Or is it, I know that we I've talked to people in New York where they say that it's actually kind of a right, you know, that they're very reluctant to violate the rights of parents, and that there has to be like some significant evidence, you know, before that they, I know when I worked in New York, they would actually give people 15 months to kind of get their life back in order, and they can actually earn their children back within that 15 months. Is it anything like that, like a rights issue, or is it something different in the state of Florida?
It's very similar what you're talking about. I think one of the greatest privacy rights that we have is being a parent.
Yeah.
Although with my career of 23 years, I do believe sometimes maybe we should have a license to have children.
Yeah,
that makes sense. I could have used that license having my own kid, right? But, you know, because parenting is hard. But I do believe because it's such a privacy right that we have within our Constitution, specifically in the state of Florida, and we have privacy rights in the U.S. Constitution too. But in, you know, within our state rights, we do have privacy rights to be a parent. And so if we have judiciary coming in and treading on that, treading on privacy rights, then we have an extreme imbalance that's happening, where judiciary becomes more of a communistic type of a bench, if you will, like dictating this is how you're going to parent, versus allowing us to have the freedom in order to parent our children and what we believe is best morally, values, all those things as we relate in our own households on how to raise parents or raise children as parents. But I think that most judges don't want to be unseated from their seat, right? They worked very hard to get there. Most of them are civil service minded. There's not a lot of pay in the judiciary bench. I mean, most people that go to the bench, they take a demotion and pay. So, you know, these are life dreams that some of these judges are having, but most of them don't want to be, you know, yanked off their seat. They don't want to be appointed by another judge. They don't want to be removed. And they also don't want other people running against them for their seat when it comes time for elections. So most judges are conservative as it relates to, okay, here's the law. Where is the wiggle room in the law? And most of them are going to go straight line down the law. And we call those strict constructionists of the law, because if they do that, then they can't be overturned by the upper court. The more they're overturned by the upper court, more opportunity is they could be unseated from their position. So I think that's another reason. I do.
Tell us a little bit about your actual practice with mediation. How would someone know? Do you think that it should be the first thing that people do before they go the litigation route? What's your opinion there, like when it comes to mediation?
The mediation process is, in my opinion, one of the greatest opportunities for people to settle their case, but not every case is right for mediation. All right. I can tell you, and this is, we kind of chatted about this right before we hopped on, but one of the things I tell people all the time is like, your case is right for mediation when you've written, as you know, too many checks to your attorney. And every time you're writing that, you got this emotion of anger and frustration, right? And that's when the case starts becoming right because there's an incentive to want to settle. There are many people that come to me prior to actually litigating their case, and they're very motivated and they have an incentive to want to settle. They don't want the war to happen. They are already going through their grieving process, which is an absolute certainty, usually, that happens in a divorce seating, setting where one person may have already gone through it and the other person is just beginning their journey for their grieving process. So I do think that there is a time and a place. I don't think that every case should come to mediation or try the mediation process prior to litigating. And I think it has to do with the incentive of both parties.
One of the things, one of the questions I get a lot, and I'm sure you do, and I know you've seen it because we talked about it before we hopped on. I get a lot of questions about narcissism. My background is in therapy. And one of the things that we know about narcissists is that it's very difficult to get them to agree on anything. A lot of times they want to fight. They sometimes are just creating chaos and trying to keep that going, keep that fight going just to spite the other person. And you mentioned that you see narcissism in mediation. How do you handle a situation like that? And do you typically see it work out, or do you have to kick that back over to litigation?
So in my practice, most people come to me because there's at least one narcissist in the mix. And I do think it takes a very qualified, special mediator to understand what narcissism looks out like, number one. And number two is to recognize it early. Because if it's recognized very early by your mediator and they have the expertise in the field where they have mediated hundreds and thousands for me of cases that involve narcissists, I think that that's imperative in order to have the best success in order to getting a case resolved with a narcissist. One of the key components to getting a narcissist to settle a case is basically utilizing the skills that they use on everybody else. Okay. So one of the things that most narcissists have is that it's usually my way, highway. They cannot see anything but black and white. And they actually can't see that there is any way that something should either settle or it can be seen another way. They are very pigeonholed. They're blinded. They're not empathetic at all. Don't have a lot of compassion. And if they do, it's used in a manipulative way. So one of the things that I've learned in my practice is that when you do have a narcissist, one of the things is to value their opinions. So, for example, I've got somebody that comes in, and let's say they have an engineering degree. And I'm using engineer because there are certain careers that people come in, and it's even more black and white than another. So, engineers is one of them. And so they come in and they have all their spreadsheets that they created, right? Which have nothing to do with the law, but they've got their Juris Doctor degree online at Google. Google gave it to them, and then they've created their spreadsheets. And they, hands down, will not be able to see that their spreadsheet may have a value that's wrong or that it could be wrong. Okay. And so one of the biggest things that we have is, like, of course, the value of a home. So let's say this engineer, let's call him Tom. Tom comes in and he's like, I believe the house is worth $500,000. And if you go on Zillow or you go on realtor.com, all of them are saying the house is worth $600,000. But he is absolutely gonna tell you that it is worth $500,000. He's gotten six of his realtor friends to tell him it's worth $500,000. And so he's not gonna be able to see that. And so one of the things that you with someone like this is like, I want to commend you, Tom. That is awesome that you got six people to come in, look at your house, and tell you, like, that's unbelievable. Like, I haven't had someone that comes with that much value to a mediation, so I want to commend you. That's unbelievable. So I want to tell you thank you. for doing that, because that's really thinking outside the box. And the fact that you created a spreadsheet, wow, there's not too many parties that come to me that create these.
Yeah.
So see, I'm buying in and I'm commending him for and valuing him, what he's bringing to the table, because that they need that. They need that to thrive. They need it to settle as well.
Yeah.
And I've learned. But that's one of the tools that I've gained is almost commending the value that they bring to the table in what it is that they believe they're right in.
Mm-hmm.
And in the end, I'm like, listen, you know, the wife thinks it's worth $600,000. We could do one of three things. And I want to pitch this to you. And listen, decision making's yours. And you have to give back the power to a narcissist.
Yeah.
Right. And so giving options to a narcissist is the greatest thing you could do, because they're like, oh my God, look at all these choices I have. I get to choose.
Yeah.
So that's another tool.
So it feels
that
like
I have.
Essentially they feel like they're the ones in power when they have to choose.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. One of my favorite things is people can't come to me and they can't decide upon a realtor to sell their home. I'm like, great. Who's a narcissist in the bunks? Great. Got it.
Yeah.
Tom's a narcissist. How about Tom, you find three realtors and give all three realtors' names to the wife, and then she can choose one of them.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the easiest thing.
That's one of my favorite tricks. One person, I use this on my kids actually. If they were fighting over like a piece of cake or something like that, one of them gets to cut it, and the other person gets to choose the slice that they get.
Exactly, because they feel like there's power in that.
Yeah,
you know, so. You know, that's another tool that I use in my, I always call it my mediational tool belt, but those are tools that I break out. And by the way, all my mediations are done in separate rooms.
Yeah.
All my mediations right now are done virtually, and I use the Zoom platform.
You know, I was actually going to ask you, cause, you know, a lot of times, you know, there are, when we talk about mediation, when we talk about court, a lot of times there's a lot of examples with, male narcissists. I was wondering if in mediation you see a lot of women who display more narcissistic qualities, and do they present any differently than the men do?
Yes. So I have both genders that come to me with narcissism. And I'm not a psychologist, but of course it calls us a counselors at law. So sometimes we wonder if that kind of waves in to our...
One of the things I'll tell you, almost every single attorney who comes on, they say that almost immediately when we hop on, they say, I feel like I'm one part lawyer and another part of me is a therapist or a counselor. So you're in good company.
Yes, absolutely. I think that's probably one of the requirements to be a lawyer these days.
Yeah.
But I do have both genders. I will say, if I had to do a percentage wise, it's probably 70% men, 30% women. At 30%, probably signs kind of high, and it might be maybe a little bit, but I'm going off the cuff because of all the thousands of mediations I've done throughout my practice. Women and men do present themselves very differently.
Mm-hmm.
A woman, they are the narcissists that come to me, a woman, they are so in the victim trap.
Mm-hmm.
And all narcissists have that because they believe they're the victim of the circumstances that they're in.
Yeah.
But the woman really, they pile it on.
Yeah.
And it is a significant difference between a male and a female narcissist. One of the other traits that I believe that women have, maybe they're trained, but caretaking is used as a manipulative measure for narcissism.
Mm-hmm.
So the nurturing aspect of the feminine, right?
Yeah.
They utilize that skill through their narcissistic personality.
One of the things it goes along with something that I've told people before, that narcissists, either male or female, will use gender bias to their advantage in court. So whatever that gender bias is, you know, well, I'm the breadwinner, so the kids need to stay with me because she can't afford to keep them. Or, well, I've always taken care of them, and, you know, he's the one that stepped out, and we wouldn't be in this position, like, you know, going back to what you're talking about in the victim mode, right? So, whatever that gender bias is, they'll utilize that to their advantage. It sounds like that's kind of been your experience.
Yeah, yeah. And it's pretty distinct difference.
Yeah.
When I have, sometimes I'll have a female narcissist in the same case, and the male's a narcissist. So there's like this competing narcissism. But yeah, those are two big distinct differences. And of course, treating those, you know, like the victim, it's like, oh my God, that's so horrible what you've gone through. I am so sorry you've had to live in this hell. And I'm excited to help you get to the next chapter today. Yeah. So I'm buying into the victim, but understanding that that's the connective piece to letting them understand that they're really in more power than they think they are, to their deciding factors. So
I think it's important for the audience to know that, like, this wouldn't work for them to do this. This works for you because you don't have any ties to them. You know, you get to go home at the end of the day. You're not married to them. You don't share children with them. You know, so before, for those of you who are listening, you're like, ooh, and you're taking notes and you think that this is going to work with you and your narcissistic ex and things like that. Don't try this at home. I'm just going to give that quick disclaimer. One question I did have for you in terms of mediation, you know, I've heard a lot of horror stories with mediation as well. And one of the things we talked about before we hopped on is that not every mediator is a good mediator. How would someone know whether or not that they are dealing with a mediator who is good versus one that may not have the level of experience that they need, or just doesn't really know what they're doing? Maybe they just kind of got thrown into the mix of things. And what can someone do about that if they're in the middle of mediation and they don't feel like they're getting a really fair shake, or that person just isn't qualified for their position?
This is a great question. It's kind of a hard answer. Mm-hmm. I will tell you that there are mediators a dime a dozen in the state of Florida. Yeah. I would say everybody and their sister's trying to be a mediator, because the litigation aspect of any divorce case, it's hard. It's very grinding. So, and one of the things I do is I have a business that I train mediators as well here in the state of Florida on how to be distinctively set yourself apart as a mediocre mediator to becoming a great mediator. I think one is, it's very hard to get the credentials of a mediator. But I'll tell your audience some bullet points that I think is important. One is, make sure they practice that area of law primarily. If you go to their website and they're litigating and they have basically 28 different practices, you need to find out if that person, how much of their practice is devoted to family law.
Right.
I personally would, if it was me, you know, I'm divorced, but I thank God I've been able to do my divorces outside the courtroom, right? So I've been divorced twice. But if I had to choose a mediator under any circumstance, it would be somebody that solely 100% practice family law. Mm-hmm. Because I know that person knows the law really well. And so when they're going to give me risk as to what I may be looking at in front of a certain judge, they know the experience behind the law because they're in that practice, or they've been before that judge before, and they know what's going to happen. Right. So that's one. One of the things I can tell you about the mediation practice is, you know, I'm not allowed to tell anybody about a mediation, right? I can't, it's all confidential. There are grave, you know, repercussions. If I could lose my license, my certification. So it's not something I can go out there and just start like telling everybody about. So, you know, it's behind closed doors, it's confidential. So how do you know behind closed doors if they're good or not? One of the main aspects of a mediator is, one, look on the website, and usually you can have this on the Florida website, and the Supreme Court is where, and it tells you how long I've been a mediator. Right. So the number of years can tell you, because I've, you know, when I first started mediating, I wasn't nearly as good as I am now because I've honed my skill. Right. So repetition, one, helps the skill level.
Repetition is the mother of all skills, is what people say.
Absolutely. So, you know, every month I look back at, you know, my month of mediations, and I'm like, I thought I heard it all until this one. Right. Because I never have. Like, there's always something new for me to learn. Right. But I think with, you know, when I say I've done thousands, and people in my community know that very well, because they knew me as a litigator. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So these are questions you want to ask your attorney, because usually if you're represented by somebody, they're going to basically vet the mediators. But these are questions you want to ask.
Yeah.
I would say, you know, if you're in a middle of a mediation and it's not going well, you don't feel you feel like the mediator's qualified. And when I say qualified, if they may disagree with something you say, maybe that's not a qualification. But if the mediator is constantly maybe saying stuff and your attorney's like, that's not what the law says, that's not what the law says, mm-hmm. that's not what the law says, talk to your attorney and say, listen, is there a way we can get somebody else? If you feel like that person's not qualified. You have every right to impasse a process. Just stop the process and end up choosing somebody. It may be a delay of a couple weeks or months or whatever it may be, but you still want to feel, you want to get the most out of the process that you can.
Yeah.
Right?
Absolutely.
So I would say if it's not something that you're feeling comfortable as though the mediator has the expertise that's needed.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing I'm going to tell you this is one of the things I've learned very early on in my practice is when I had a mediator, it just conveyed an offer back and forth. They just weren't good mediators. I don't need somebody to tell the other side exactly what I'm saying. I need the other mediator to say, are you serious? You know, I'm looking on Zillow right now and the house is worth $620 and your wife is saying $600. Do you really want to take the risk of getting this thing appraised and having the court end up saying the house is worth $620,000? I mean, do you really want that?
Yeah.
That's a good mediator versus saying, well, he's saying $500,000. What do you want to do?
Mm-hmm.
So it just a conveying of the offer, which is required in the process, but just a conveying is not going to get a party to move very much off their target.
Right. That makes sense. What are some things that prevent people from coming up with an agreement through mediation?
So one of the biggest impediments, I believe, in the process of mediation and getting the case basically across the finish line is the emotions of the parties.
Yeah.
One of the biggest ones is anger.
Hmm.
And
is
this
it anger
is a
resentment?
I think the two are related.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
if you're angry, it's usually because you're resentful to the other person.
Yeah. Right.
Right? And and they're intertwined. Bitterness, anger, resentment. I it's like the trifecta, right?
Yeah.
The trifecta of impediments to getting a case settled.
Yeah.
I recently authored a book called Forgiving Unforgivable, and I talk about my journey of life because I came from a very traumatic childhood. My father was extremely abusive. I ended up in a lot of domestic violence relationships, which was the outcome of being raised in that type of atmosphere.
Right.
And one of the things that I've learned is everybody's timeline for forgiveness is different. And there's some people that die from this earth before they're able to forgive, right?
Yeah.
But for me, I was able to forgive, right? I had a guy break my arm, and my first marriage was really tough as well. So, I, you know, forgiving those people was just not on my radar. And first, you know, I didn't want to.
Right.
But you know, when I look at the impediments to people not being able to settle their cases, they walk into the mediation with the intention of vindication.
Yeah.
They need to be, they want.
I hear people talking. I hear that you can hear that in their voice that, you know, the spitefulness, the vengefulness that they have. And they, you know, you even hear people say like, I want to win the divorce. When anyone who's been through it or talks about it or is in this atmosphere, we know that no one really actually wins. You know, you're dissolving a relationship. You're separating assets and things like that. And so no one really actually wins, even in the best cases of situations.
That's right. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know how you can say you win when you take a house and you have to cut it in two.
Right.
Or you take your kids and what, we're going to chainsaw our kids in half so that you get equal parts. There's no fairness.
Right.
Right? But I, you know, going back to that, I think if your listeners can really think about what do I want to get out of this process so I can move on to the next chapter of my life and gain freedom. Because if you focus in on freedom versus vindication, you can get your case settled.
Mm-hmm.
And freedom is I no longer have to live the way that I've been living or feeling the way that I'm feeling.
Right.
If I can detach from the situation and get out of this process and move on.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. I tell people that you want to get, especially if they're coming out of a domestic violence situation, or a conflict situation, you want to get out of it as least unscathed as I tell people you're not getting out of it unscathed completely, but you want to minimize the scathing as much as you possibly can. And I think that for a lot of people, mediation might be the best route to be able to do that.
Right. A lot of my cases, like 85% of my practice was devoted to domestic violence when I litigated. And then I would say, here in the state of Florida, I'm one of the go-to mediators, is very well-versed in the area of domestic violence. And I think the hardest part is when a victim has turned the corner and become a survivor, and they said no more. They've drawn the boundary and they're like, no more. That will be the last time that that person hits me. And when they walk out, or they decide mentally they're done with that relationship, there is a huge pendulum swing, and that vindication comes in. Like, that guy or that girl, that woman or that man needs to pay for what they did for me. And if you can turn that anger, and you can say, I will accept freedom at all cost.
Yeah.
At all cost.
Yeah.
Gain freedom. So I have my life back, and the power that that person had over me no longer exists. Then you'll be in the right frame of mind in order to get the case done, get the case settled.
Natalie, you have been a wealth of knowledge. This has been absolutely, absolutely amazing. I think that a lot of our listeners have gained a lot of knowledge. And if you're listening to this, and if you're watching, it doesn't matter where you are watching or listening, go down to our comment section down below. Let us know a takeaway that you may have learned from today's episode. Also, go to Natalie's, all of her social media sites, and give her a DM or shoot her a message in her comment section. Also, give her a follow. Let her know some things that you may have learned as well. Natalie, I'm going to kick it over to you. Let people know where they can find you at. Let people know, you know, any social media or any websites that people can find you if they want to learn more about what you do and the work that you do.
Sure. My website is probably the main place. It's nataliebirdmediations.com. You can find me on all the social media, Natalie Bird Mediations. And so those are the best places to find me. I'd love to hear from you. If you have questions, reach out.
Also, all of her information is down in the show notes as well. So if you are in Florida, if you're in the Tampa area, if you're looking for a mediator, or if you want to make a suggestion to a friend or family member for a mediator, you obviously know where to find her at. And like I said, all of that information will be down in the show notes. So thanks again. This is the Matt Pfeiffer Experience. I'm your host, and I will see you again on the next episode. You guys have a great one.